today and happy to join such a great panel. She said, my name is Lori Lopez. I'm a PhD candidate in health behavior and health education, School of Michigan University of Public Health, School of Public Health, University of Michigan. Today we'll be talking about the community level health effects of an immigration home. And I'm using a case study from a raid that occurred in Washoe County. So I want to start with a story about Lupin Fernanda. So Lupin Fernanda are two Mexican women who came and lived in Washoe County. They're both in their 20s, and they both have children. Fernanda has two children. In November 7th, 2013, one of her children was a young son of 4 years old. And she also had a daughter who was a newborn, a few months old. Lupin also had a daughter who was a few months old. They lived on the second floor of her warehouse, that they had converted into an apartment. Their first floor that remained in the garage, where their husband, Fernanda's husband, could work on cars and provide some income for the family. So on this day, November 7th, at about dusk, Kristen looked outside. They don't know what's going on, but suddenly they hear their door being broken down and they see the SWAT team enter the house. The room becomes full of troops, law officers, body armor weapons. There was also a 16-year-old girl in the Gilmore house at the time, sorry, in the apartment at the time. Officers tell all of the women to get on the ground, even while they're holding their infants. And all this, of course, is in English, not Spanish, and the students speak Spanish. The door was broken down, the hands were shuffled and thrown around and strewn all over the floor. And the men said they were dogs that were brought in and still do their things and ask them to explore. So this is an example of an immigration home raid. It was a particularly brutal one. The shuffling outside was not only from the SWAT team, but from three other law enforcement agencies, the Michigan State Police Department, Washoe County Sheriff's Office, and of course Immigration Customs Enforcement. So our study asks the question, what are the effects of these raids? Specifically, what do they do to the Latino communities in which these raids occur? So if we're using a case study, in order to draw on case studies, we need to know how much of a representative case it is compared to other instances, other cases. So generally, we don't know a lot about immigration homeless. We as researchers don't know a lot about immigration homeless. And the reasons for these are many. Raids are purposefully unpredictable. Folks who are involved in them often don't want to speak about them because they're worried about their profession and even if they're law enforcement. But what we know from many lawyers who have worked on issues related to the violation of rights of personal residence. We know that raids often occur in frequent hours. Often agents in body armor with weapons, pounding on doors and windows, occupants are placed in central locations. Documents are taken, these collateral arrests are made, people can look close to them and they can document them. And there's often many witnesses, including children. So the case is different in a few important ways. And the first and most notable was the use of the SWAT team. So the SWAT team was used because there was a rumor that guns and drugs were on these premises. But otherwise, a second large difference is that this was a multi-use facility. So again, the second floor was converted into an apartment, and the first floor was still used as a garage or workshop. When many home raids occur in neighborhoods. Otherwise, we see this home raid is typical to many others that law officials have described throughout the country. We also know that this is a collaborative enforcement event. And as some of our panelists will describe when we talk about secure communities, we have done research in the negative impact of secure communities. When police collaborate with immigration law enforcement, it turns the neighborhood into the space of perpetual surveillance. Where folks are worried about going to the grocery store, worried about being carted in buses, worried about going to the library. They avoid social services, they avoid public spaces, and when detention, when deportation happens, of course, there's providers and family roles that are rearranged. So there's some gaps in the literature that we wanted to address in this work. For one, little work on immigration enforcement occurs outside of the southern border region during large urban centers like Berlin and Chicago. This is all great work that we can build on, but being in the Midwest, we often find ourselves in a different environment than Arizona or Texas, California. And of course, there's limited work on home raids. And the work that has occurred again is largely legal work and doesn't focus on health and community health. So for this study, we used data from the Encuesta Rentals teams. And so many of the authors were both working at the University of Michigan on issues related to Latino health, or also advocates in the community. Some were one of those, many were both of those. So we were aware of what was happening in the community, but also aware of the And the name, the request that went to the scene was that the neighbor survey and to provide a representative depiction of the Latino community in Washtenaw County. In the survey, it was a little more than half women, average age was about 37. The folks lived in the U.S. for about 15 years, and it's county for 9.5, and it was largely a one-on-one sample. Now, what we saw was that the study began in September, and then the study ended in January. So about in the middle is when this rate occurred. So what we're able to do is look at this case study, a natural experiment, in which there's 325 participants completed a survey on social determinants of health before, and 151 completed this after. What we wanted to do in our quantitative analysis, now this analysis did not particularly look at home rates. We weren't expecting this to happen, or at least we didn't want to admit that we thought it may happen. So we looked at items that met three criteria. They captured immigration-related stress, they had health implications for the community level, and the items were related to previous findings about collaborative immigration enforcement. So we took three items out of the survey. I will be reported to immigration if I go to a social service agency. My legal status is limited contact with my family and friends, and I fear the consequences of deportation. And we think these are related to community level health for reasons that we described a little bit earlier. For example, avoiding social service agencies, avoiding signaling, avoiding SNAP, avoiding participating in your children's school, limiting contact with family for similar reasons, but also with the community for guarantees and help as well. And we conducted bivariate analysis of the 325 participants in the survey before and the 151 after. What's the time? So what we can see in the results, on the x-axis we have the overall sample as well as the demographic categories of interest and theoretical interest in the study. And on the y-axis we have the extent to which participants agreed and disagreed. So one is completely disagreed and five would be completely agreed. And we divided each category by those in blue who completed the survey before the raid and the Latino and Latina participants who completed the survey after the raid. So in response to this question, I will be reported to immigration if I go to a social service agency. We see that among foreign-born participants and those with children in the house, after the raid, there is more agreement with this item. We see some sort of change in the participants, or other participants who took the survey after are agreeing with this item more. We see an even stronger effect in the second. So my legal status has limited contact with my family and friends. And we see in the overall sample that participants' agreement increased. We see this among men. We see this among foreign-born. And then we see it drastically among those with children in the house. For the third item, we see I fear the consequences of deportation. And again, in line with the second, we see in the overall sample there is more agreement by the Latinos and Latinas who took the survey after the raid, as well as among women, foreign-born, and again, those with children in the house. So just to review where we've come from, we see we had this survey in Puerto Buenos Vecinos, and about 500 or so participants, a little less. And this rate occurred in the middle. So we're able to compare measures of community health, individual health, etc., before and after the raid. This is a little easier to see when it's all in one table. So these are the three measures, and these are the notable divisions of the sample. So we see for two of the three questions in the full sample, these items show up after the raid. Folks are more concerned with their legal status, or more likely to agree that their legal status has limited contact with their family and friends, and are more likely to agree that they hear the idea of consequences of deportation. We see this among foreign-born universally, among men and women, but notably, all three of them, again, among those with children in the house. So if we return back to Lupe and Fernando in the beginning, we remember there were 20-something-year-old women, undocumented women. So thus they were foreign-born and they had children in the house. And so that they experienced immediate physical and mental repercussions of this raid. They testified of bruises on their bodies. Social workers who showed up after the raid noted times of trauma for them and their children. But we see also how likely they are to be vulnerable in the aftermath of this raid. They had the breadwinners in their family. They knew So what does this all mean? What can we take away from it? Given the findings, we see that these immigration rates seem to remind us in the sample of their legal vulnerability in the back of other members of their family. That is, it reminds them they're able to be deported. And it reminds them that social services are collaborating with these students, and it's believed that social services and other police forces are collaborating. They're worried about being at their house. They're thinking of the salience of immigration status or that of other family communities. In this particular case, we argue often it's those people who are the most vulnerable, in this case the women, who didn't have jobs and who didn't speak the language, who are most aware of the potential to be deported. They probably would experience the worst outcomes after this when they're limited with their interaction with family and community. So what we would suggest, as will the other panelists, is that our immigration policy debates must consider the full social cost of this immigration enforcement policies, including the long-term repercussions on the families and communities in which they occur. So there are some limitations that we should note. This is a natural experiment, and as with all natural experiments, you do your best to see that the change can be attributed to the cause, but again, many things we're not controlling for. So it's hard to pinpoint specifically. Participants are going to be at the same time point before after the ring. It wasn't longitudinal. You can imagine there's virtually no way this study longitudinally. And of course, this is a bivariate analysis, so there's only certain screen work or hopefully the data. So I want to thank mostly the Washington Ukraine Coalition for Human Rights, who worked with us in the aftermath of the raid to get the details of what happened with the secret folks involved, as well as the Quest of Lennon Sassino's team, and all the men and women who spoke with us about the investigation. So thank you very much.
Are there any questions for William? Sure. Go ahead, please.
Is there any way to document what the community's response was to these raids outside of the population?
Right, so one thing that was notable is that this was a survey of females in Washington County. So not everyone was undocumented. In fact, we don't know the documentation status. 84% were born abroad, but not everyone was undocumented. But this was just seems to have an effect whether or not folks were undocumented. And so the response in the community, so when we were working with Victor, the Washington State Coalition for Human Rights, they staff an urgent response line, which is an immigration emergency that folks can call this line, and Victor will put them in touch with social workers or lawyers who can address this, and Victor takes pretty good notes of what's going on. So we are able to see, this is part of the work coming out of this. We want to argue that this is a brutal, violent, militaristic raid, but it's a raid that is an acute stress that occurs in the environment of chronic immigration stress. So we don't want to just say this is what affects communities, but this is what affects already disenfranchised families in our communities. In response to the raid, there was also much work on options shared beforehand to support Latinos and Latinas in the county trust and police officers saying we don't prioritize. These events happen and those relationships can be shattered, and they're very hard to repair.
Sure. Is there any, other than the one you just mentioned, is there any other captured data on the female address or other group in the community that fits against the need for their effects or against shock?
I think it's a good question, and it's one that often we don't talk about who's really to. So when I say we don't talk about them, I mean academics. I used to always say that all the time, that there is no doubt. The women I talk to, this is their life. They know a lot about it. I'm the one who doesn't know it. And sometimes outside organizations don't know how to address these facts. So there are organizations that will attempt to address it, but most of all, the organizations that are already out there outside and to listen to people whose everyday lives are these experiences. And that often includes facilitating ways for folks who are involved to feel safe. It's very easy to see me as a researcher, English is my first language. No matter what my history is, I was born in Texas, but ultimately, it's like I'm a member of a university, I'm a member of an institution, I can easily be cast as someone who can collaborate with us. So the role may not be ours to intercede on what's happening in these communities, the role may be ours, though, to facilitate communication or other resources.
I think. Oh, go ahead. Respond to that. I think we're going to. There are just a few other hands going up. I was going to say we'll save them for the end if you can jot them down and remember them.
Great.
Thank you very much for this.